BBC headlines come your way every weekday morning here at KGNU. It's Friday, April 1st. It's 8:03. I'm Shelley Schlender. Coming up, what's happening in the natural world? We'll find out on the Nature Almanac. And then, civil unions have failed in Colorado. We'll hear that story from Benta Berkland, and following that, we'll talk with an expert on the health hazards of radiation, who will be speaking at Naropa's Nalanda campus in Boulder this evening on behalf of the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center. Next, we'll hear about the Boulder City Council's move to select an official city beverage, an organic decaf soy latte, and a survey by KC Middle School students about what local citizens think of the idea. Jim Hightower just before the bottom of the hour. Then at 8:30, Connections. Host Liz Lane will invite your calls about greenwashing, corporations that act like they're environmental but maybe are not. All that and more here at your volunteer-powered, listener-supported radio station, KGNU. Let's start with a look at the local headlines. And for that, here's Susan Glaron.
Boulder City Council has approved an application for the city's first medical meth dispensary. Several thousand more applications are pending. At least one license was rejected because the medical meth dispensary violated the city's good neighbor policy after an explosion erupted and burned down several adjacent houses. The city of Boulder is refusing to release copies of criminal background checks that it ran on people applying for medical meth business licenses, and a city spokesperson told reporters it's nobody's business what the dispensary owners did prior to submitting their applications. However, on March 15th, the city inadvertently disclosed a map of all the locations where the meth was being cooked. But the webmaster told KGNU it wasn't his fault because he hadn't slept in the last three nights, and also told reporters it didn't matter because they were located in Longmont, Lafayette, and Louisville. The city estimates the first dispensary alone will bring in $2.2 million in sales tax revenues in the first 2 days of operations. City Council members plan to take a trip to Kauai with some of the revenues, with hopes of going to Fiji the following month. For KGNU, this is Susan Glaron. The city of Boulder was officially ousted from the state of Colorado yesterday. KGNU's Gerald Cirincianu has the story.
In a shocking example of backstreet politics, late last night, the city of Colorado Springs achieved a long-hoped-for goal. It has excommunicated Boulder from the state of Colorado. The leader of the Springs-based Heresy Tribunal, Bruce Douglas, explained his efforts like this. Boulderites are too rich, too thin, too fit, too brainy, too environmentally conscious, too socially aware, and too concerned about diversity for the rest of the human race. Boulder would fit in much better with Venus or Vulcan. The Boulder City Council, in an early morning emergency session, responded by renaming itself the Boulder Interplanetary Parliament, and as its first two official acts, named the Grateful Dead's Truckin' as Boulder's national anthem and Cannabis Sativa as Boulder's official flower. But while Boulder's interplanetary independence seems full speed ahead, through our volunteers at WikiLeaks, KGNU has intercepted a reconciliation email from Boulder City Council to Bruce Douglas that states, "Just because we Boulderites happen to be better than everybody else in every way doesn't mean we should separate ourselves. We have a responsibility to teach and enlighten the rest of the world." Bruce Douglas has responded in private email that he's going to kick anyone who challenges him. He added that he'll only consider a request to let Boulder rejoin Colorado if the city promises a greater focus on the family. For KGNU, I'm Gerald Cirincione.
Boulder's prairie dogs and mountain bikers are teaming up. Alec Harris has the story.
It seems open space breeds odd denfellows. On Wednesday, members of a newly formed mountain biker prairie dog advocates coalition expressed solidarity and dissatisfaction with Boulder's open space policies. The Mountain Lovers Coalition is fighting what it calls oppressive and discriminatory treatment by the city of Boulder. Chief on the coalition's to-do list is a joint space for bikers and prairie dogs. The plan would rely on a symbiotic relationship of sorts, wherein prairie dogs would create ever-changing terrain for bikes, riders in bright tight-fitting spandex would keep walkers away, and chirping prairie dogs would warn of approaching city officials. In the past, both mountain bikers and prairie dogs have lost out on the use of Boulder's open space. Bikers were recently denied access to a new swath of open space west of the city, and a North Boulder colony of prairie dogs is currently slated for forced removal by vacuum. In both cases, residents near the area cited bad odor and risk of disease as motivating concerns. For KGNU, this is Alec Harris.
A low-pressure zone is intensifying along the Front Range, with 12 to 15 inches of snow predicted for parts of North Boulder, Gun Barrel, and Lafayette. Strong winds and the wet, heavy nature of the snow may lead to power outages. Major travel disruption with school closures are predicted for Saturday and Sunday. No, just kidding. Today's weather sunny and breezy with a high of 72 degrees. And look for beautiful weather on Saturday, partly cloudy with a high of 79 degrees. Today is April 1st. Happy April Fool's Day. For KGNU, this is Susan Glarin.
It's April. What's happening in the natural world? Here's Ruth Carol Cushman, co-author of Wild Boulder County.
Today we're talking with Jan Chu about butterflies. Jan is one of the best lepidopterists in the state. Jan, the only butterfly I've seen this spring is cabbage white.
You're lucky if you see cabbage white right around your house or around our local gardens. But if you walk into the canyons and the lower foothills, you're going to be seeing the Milbert's tortoiseshell. It's a colorful black butterfly with sunrise orange and yellow on its wings. I saw one on the path the other day at Anu White Trail, right flat against the dirt, soaking up the heat it could find.
What tips can you give people about finding butterflies?
A day that's sunny, quiet, and warm would be ideal for looking for butterflies. Quite often between 10 in the morning and before 4 in the afternoon. Butterflies have to warm up their wing muscles to at least 60 degrees Fahrenheit before they're really comfortable and able to fly.
A lot of times when we're out, we see butterflies moving around in the mud. What is that all about?
Quite often they're blues, so-called. They are blue in color. These are males that are on the ground taking substances out of the mud, and they'll be using that in making the sperm, which goes to make healthy eggs a little bit later, and then healthy caterpillars.
At this time of year, isn't one of the early butterflies the morning cloak? Have you seen any of those this year?
We have. We've gone up into a small canyon that seems to be out of the wind quite a bit. The morning cloak is quite a large black butterfly. On the margins of the wings, you'll see yellow. The lady was in mourning, so she had her cloak on, but her yellow long skirt shows at the bottom of the cloak.
If they come out, like the morning cloaks often do, before the flowers are blooming, what do they feed on?
If there are some broken branches around, there's sap starting to come up. The sap has a lot of sugar in it, and the butterflies can use that.
Steve Jones and Ruth Carol Cushman are co-authors of The Peterson Field Guide to the North American Prairie and Wild Boulder County.
It's 8:12. You're tuned to KGNU. A bill that would have created civil unions in Colorado failed yesterday in the House Judiciary Committee on a party-line vote. It was widely expected to die in the Republican-controlled committee, but proponents remained optimistic right up until the last vote was cast. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Supporters of civil unions needed just one Republican on the House Judiciary Committee to vote for the bill. It would have covered end-of-life decisions, hospital visitation, and child support and custody, among other things. And dozens of couples pleaded their cases in a nearly 8-hour hearing.
A civil union would give us the ability to protect each other and our future children, because that's what you do when you love someone. I'm not asking for the moon here. It's just a simple set of laws that are going to make things a little fairer for us.
That's Sonia Semyon. She was among the hundreds of people who filled the Capitol's largest committee room, spilling into the hallway. Democratic Representative Mark Ferrandino of Denver sponsored Senate Bill 172. He's one of four openly gay lawmakers in the state legislature, and his partner and twin sister testified during the hearing.
Everyone should have equal rights. This is not a question of religion, nor a question of the disintegration of the family unit. Colorado is at a time where civil unions is the right thing to do.
The hearing was tense and emotional and touched on topics ranging from morality and theology to biology and civil rights. Take this exchange between former Republican lawmaker Ed Jones of Colorado Springs and Democratic committee member Daniel Kagan of Denver. Jones says, as an African American, he's insulted when the bill's dubbed a civil rights issue.
They made a choice. I didn't have a choice to be born the way I am. I didn't have a choice to choose my parents. God doesn't make mistakes. There is a reason why we look different, man and woman.
They no more chose to be gay than the young man on the tree chose to be black, or my grandfather chose to be Jewish. All those groups and others have been subjected to unreasoning hatred, disgust, contempt, disapproval of their worth as a human being and, yes, sir, of their civil rights.
Colorado Family Action, an arm of the conservative group Focus on the Family, also testified against the measure. Douglas Napier is with the group and says civil unions would break down the family structure of one man and one woman.
A vote in favor of civil unions in Colorado is a vote in favor of same-sex marriage. Because in every state where civil unions have been ushered in, that has never been enough.
And when it came time to vote, Republican Mark Waller of Colorado Springs did feel it was too similar to marriage.
I believe that this bill is nothing more than marriage called something else.
Republican Representative Brian Del Grosso from Loveland bowed his head when he cast his no vote. He called the testimony compelling.
Dealing with people's lives here, and at the end of the day, it was a very extremely tough vote, I think, for everybody that was on the committee. It just came down to that a lot of the folks just 4.5 years ago said that, no, we didn't support that.
The measure did have enough Republican votes to pass the full House floor. It had already cleared the Senate with bipartisan support, and Governor John Hickenlooper sent out a letter backing it just before the hearing. But Representative Ferrandino warns the fight is far from over.
I do think there were members on this committee who were open to the legislation, but from pressure from the far right, decided that they couldn't go there because they were too worried about their political future.
Ferrandino says he believes Colorado will end up with civil unions. He says it'll just take a little longer than he had hoped. I'm Benta Brooklyn at the State Capitol.
It's 8:16. You're tuned to KGNU. Tonight, at 7:30, at Naropa University Nalanda Campus, which is at 63rd and Arapaho in Boulder, Steve Wing will speak about radiation health effects, the case of plutonium. Epidemiologist Wing of the University of North Carolina has studied radiation-exposed workers in U.S. nuclear weapons facilities, as well as health effects of ionizing radiation. Steve Wing says there's always radiation risk. For instance, people who live at high altitudes, such as in Colorado, just because they live at a higher altitude, have more radiation risk than people who live at a lower altitude, such as in New York City. And there's dental x-rays. Well, here's Steve Wing to tell you more.
There's evidence that dental x-rays produce disease in a population. I do have sometimes x-rays. I think for someone who has a low rate of developing caries the way I do, I don't need to have as frequent a screening as what the dentists like to do, though.
So your understanding of radiation has led you to be cautious about all kinds of radiation.
And I hope even to educate the dentists about the fact that they're working with something that, when multiplied over many people, could harm some of them.
How does that compare to your concerns about nuclear power plants and the potential radiation from them?
I have similar feeling. We all need to be able to protect ourselves and behave responsibly. The real problems with nuclear power or with medical radiation or the radiation that comes from nuclear weapons production has to do with the fact that many, many people can be exposed, and what happens to them when some of them develop disease becomes lost in a sea of other causes of these diseases, and so it becomes invisible. But we know it's there. We hope that its invisibility, by being mixed among so many people, won't paralyze us from being able to take measures to protect populations.
What's happening to people in Japan? That's Steve Wing talking about radiation health effects. You can hear more from him tonight at his talk at 7:30 at Naropa University's Nalanda campus, which is at 63rd and Arapaho in Boulder. You're tuned to KGNU. Up next, you've probably heard about the Boulder City Council's move to select an official city beverage. Well, to find out what Boulder citizens think of this, we asked Casey Middle School students yesterday to go and survey both students there at Casey Middle School and also people out on the Boulder Pearl Street Mall, especially at the Hotel Boulderado. So let's listen into what those Casey Middle School surveyors found out.
My name is Jack. I'm a student at Casey Middle School, and I'm helping KGNU conduct a survey that will broadcast on tomorrow morning's news. Do you mind if I ask you the survey question?
Sure.
The city council is thinking of choosing an official Boulder beverage. The top choice is an organic decaf soy latte.
What do you mean a Boulder beverage?
How would the state flower and the state dinosaur?
So now we have like a state drink?
Well, they're deciding on one.
I don't like coffee, so I don't know.
Do you have an alternate beverage to suggest?
Don't people like make those organic sodas that are really good? Don't they make those here?
Hi, my name is Allie. The city council is thinking of choosing an official Boulder beverage. Top choice is organic decaf soy latte.
I don't really like soy, so I would say I'm against it.
Do you have any alternative beverages suggestions?
I'm gonna go with water.
Thank you. The top choice is organic decaf soy latte. What do you think of this idea?
I think that's a great idea.
Do you have an alternative beverage to suggest?
Possibly an organic decaf chai.
Well, I think that's a fine idea. Organic soy latte. Is it going to be caffeinated?
Yes.
Decaf. Well, I don't know about that. I'm not a decaf drinker myself, but I wouldn't be offended if they came up with that.
Do you have an alternate beverage to suggest?
I would probably suggest a organic soy chai.
I do not agree with this idea.
Do you have an alternative beverage to suggest?
Yes. This is a black iced tea. Unsweetened, that would be my choice.
I love it. I love soy latte. It's my favorite.
Drinking water.
Hi, my name is Taylor. I'm a student at Casey Middle School. The city council is thinking of choosing an official Boulder beverage. The top choice is an organic decaf soy latte. What do you think of the idea?
Good. I would say also anything from Celestial Seasonings Tea, because when people come to Boulder, they think of Celestial Seasonings Tea. And I'm a tea drinker, so I think that would be great.
I'm not a soy fan personally, so I would vote against it if I was voting.
Eldorado Springs Water, that's a good company, a good beverage.
This is organic decaf soy latte. What do you think of this idea?
Sounds horrible.
Do you have an alternative beverage to suggest?
Gatorade. Hi, my name is Sophia Cornell. I'm a student at Casey Middle School. So the city council is thinking of choosing an official Boulder beverage. The top choice is organic decaf soy latte.
Personally, I wouldn't choose that because I don't really actually like coffee or lattes, but I think a good drink that would be good for Boulder is Izzy's because it was made in Boulder and everyone knows about them. We sell them at all middle schools. At Casey, they have Izzy's for lunch. The daughter of the person who made the Izzy's goes to Manhattan Middle School with Down syndrome, and I think it would be really sweet if we could make Izzy the Boulder beverage choice.
I don't think the Boulder City Council should be involved in choosing a beverage.
Hi, my name is Ava Williams. The City Council is thinking of choosing an official Boulder beverage. The top choices are organic decaf soy latte.
Why are they thinking about choosing an official beverage?
I don't know.
Probably like just for the fun of it. Something. I mean, to
is
represent
it something
us.
That city council is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like a silly thing for city council to be spending their time on.
Do you have an alternative beverage to suggest?
Well, I wouldn't want to represent any corporation, so I wouldn't want to do Izzy or something like that. What was the beverage?
An organic decaf soy latte.
Well, that sounds very bolder. I'm not sure it's a reputation that we would want to actually cement by choosing an official beverage.
Cool. Thank you. I think that's kind of frou-frou. Lattes are organic, soy something, whatever. I mean, blah. No, I don't like it.
Do you have an alternative beverage?
I think we shouldn't have a beverage. I don't really see the point.
And thanks to those Casey Middle School students for helping us with that survey on this April Fool's Day, where actually the city of Boulder is not planning, as far as we know, to have an official city beverage. After we let the students know that it was for April Fool's Day, Sophia said that she has a secret for students who want to fool their parents, and that's to put Monopoly money into their wallets and take out the real money. That's her April Fool's tip to other kids today. Up next, to find out more about April Fool's Day, it turns out that one KGNU volunteer, Mike Bell, is also a professor from CU who's a national expert on April Fool's Day. Here's Mike Bell talking about the history of April Fool's Day.
I backed into folklore and I taught it for about 30 years at CU. April Fool's Day is the kind of thing that people wonder about the origin of. They have variations on it, like in France they call it the April Fish. School kids try to sneak up behind their classmates and stick a paper fish on their back, kind of like the old kick me thing. But they call it the April Gowk, which means a parrot or a sucker in Scotland. So there are birds, there are fish, and there are fools, and probably other ones too.
What's your favorite practical joke?
It's this really elaborate one that was a European one. I don't know if it still exists, but it's called a fool's errand. Somebody tries to convince a naive person that a person they both know is deathly sick and is going to die unless the other person runs right away to a pharmacist and gets a packet of dried crab's blood or dried water or flea bone meal. And he sends them off to the pharmacist who's in on the joke. And the pharmacist says, we're fresh out of them. You got to go to this other pharmacy, which is all the way across town. And the other pharmacist is in on it too. And they try to keep the kid running all over town all day until he realizes that he's been duped. Mechanics will send the newbie off to get a left-handed monkey wrench. My cousin, when he was on his first naval ROTC cruise, one of his officers ordered him to go to the quartermaster and get 50 meters of shoreline. But he was kind of hip, so he went down to the flight deck instead and watched half a movie and then went back to the officer and said, I'm sorry, sir, I went all over the ship and I couldn't find any shoreline. In other words, he was the one who was supposed to run all over the ship, getting sent from pillar to post, the shoreline's over in that locker. No, the shoreline's back there. But he watched half a movie instead, so he kind of turned the tables on the guy. There must have been people in the Navy who don't know what shoreline is. That's the whole point. The shoreline is the coastline. The most recent one I think I've heard of is telling a co-worker in your office, assuming you know his girlfriend, that she's pregnant when she's not. And it sends the guy into conniptions.
Now, how do you draw the line between a fun practical joke and a malicious one? Because that's getting on the edge.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I guess, you know, anytime the practical jokes are around, there are going to be malicious ones. The thing about April Fool's Day is that it's one time of the year when it's okay to pull these pranks. There's sort of a permissiveness about it, like on Halloween. On an ordinary day, we don't go around TPing people's front yard trees. We don't go around soaping their windows. Those rules are suspended for Halloween.
And Mike Bell says that they're suspended also for April Fool's Day. He said that when he was a professor, he used to give students a test that wasn't announced on April Fool's Day and watch how long it took before everybody caught on. It's 8:27. Let's go now to Jim Hightower.
I recently joined hundreds of Texans in a Day of the Fallen protest, leading our march to the state capitol were people bearing 138 black coffins. This was not a war protest, not in the sense of a shooting war, but it was a protest about the senseless casualties in America's relentless class war. The caskets symbolized the 138 Texas construction workers who died on the job in 2009. This is a national issue, but my state hailed by our governor as business friendly, is number one in the nation in the business of killing and maiming those who dig our trenches, erect our condos, wire our office buildings, roof our houses, and otherwise put themselves on the line to construct and maintain a modern city. Another construction worker dies every 2.5 days in Texas. Needlessly. Here and elsewhere around the country, corporate chieftains and political leaders simply avert their eyes from this routine mayhem. You never find a CEO or governor at the funerals. And since they will themselves not to see the problems, they do nothing to fix them. In Texas, builders and contractors are not even required to provide basic safety training and equipment, carry workers' compensation insurance, or allow rest breaks. Working 8 to 12 hours or more a day in 100-degree heat is inherently dangerous, and with no precautions or breaks, injuries and deaths are inevitable. Bear in mind that these corporations are profitable. They certainly can afford to give workers a couple of 10-minute breaks in an 8-hour shift. This is Jim Hightower saying, imagine the urgent cry for reform if construction company CEOs were being killed at the rate of 1 every 2.5 days. It's time to put some ethics back in the work ethic. To help, contact the National Organization of Injured Workers at www.noiw.org. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
And you can find out more about KGNU at our website, which is kgnu.org. I'm Shelley Schlender. It's 8:30. This concludes the Morning Magazine on a day where we're expecting beautiful sunny weather.